guns. Tell us, General, is it party time? If it is, can we all come?
Welcome back to the Dental Practice Fixers Podcast. I am your co-host, one of your hosts, Dr. David Matto.
I'm your co-host as well, Dr. Richard Matto, and thanks so much for joining us. Today, we're going to be talking about some cool stuff that you'll love and will help you with your practice, maybe even your life.
It's episode 3, and actually what we're going to be talking today, the title of it is The Biggest Mistakes We Made When Starting Our Practices. Rich and I are going to be sharing some things with you that if we only would have done them a little bit differently. See, our practices were pretty successful, I think. I'd like to think they were really nice, but if we did things a little bit differently, oh my God, it just would have been a different world. So we'll share these with you.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, despite the title, one of the things I have in mind actually did not take place at the start of my practice, but towards the very end of my practice. So that should be interesting as well.
Oh, is that allowed? I thought these are like the beginning. Oh,
there are rules. We can break the rules.
We can break
any rule. We make
them,
we break them.
That was really quick. That was really quick. We start the rules and within 15 seconds, they're broken. But Rich, you want to, today, I'm going to do this today, I guess. So we try to start every single episode off with a little quick tip. We're going to give you 30 seconds or less, 60 seconds or less, that's going to immediately help you in your practice. And my tip today is, well, Rich and I started this back in, that we had this idea back in, it was like about 30 years ago or so. We developed something called the Statement of Delinquency. It kind of looks like a legal form, but it's really not legal. But what you do is if patients owe you money, you send this special form to your patient. Even if everything else has failed, it doesn't really matter. Once they get this special form called the Statement of Delinquency, it looks legal, although it's not. It looks threatening, although it's really not. Many patients are going to come in and pay you. They're going to send you a check. Some patients actually come in and plop cash down on the counter because they don't know what's going to happen if they just let this go unchecked and they pay you. And it's really funny, Rich, over the years we've had, I don't know, what would you say, tens of thousands of doctors that have ordered this form from us.
At one time we figured we had 30,000 practices using the Statement of Delinquency form. And not just all dental. We had medical, veterinary,
right,
optometrectic, whatever they're called, eye doctors.
Optometrectic.
<Right.
laughs> But I think even more importantly, one time, it was a long time ago, so the calculation would be different now, but we calculated that from this form, doctors or anybody that's used it have collected millions and millions of dollars.
I think we calculated something like $80 million or something.
And that was a while ago. Yep, so it's probably like, ago. It might be $800 million by now. Who knows?
Maybe.
But anyway, check this form out. If your collections are a little bit slow, if you want to like beef up this month and really start bringing in a lot more money, check it out. Just go to our website, maddow.com, maddow.com. And when you get there, there's kind of like a nav bar, a menu bar. Click on the little link that says products and then the collection form. They'll be the very first one. Once you click on products, you'll see it right there. Give them a try. They're really super inexpensive, and you will be collecting more than you'd ever believe.
All right. Hey, good stuff. Collect some money from your patients. It's yours. Get it. They owe you. Don't let them get away with it. So, hey, let's talk today about some mistakes that we both made. As Dave said before, we had practices independent of one another. I bought a really crappy failing practice, if you remember from our very first episode. Dave started a practice from scratch with a partner. We did a lot of things right, but we also did a lot of things wrong. So I have a few things in mind that I want to talk about. But Dave, I'll toss it over to you first. What's a mistake that you made when you started your practice or at any time in your practice? What the heck?
I'd say, I think about this all the time, Rich. And if I could go back, I mean, you know, we were dentists. We graduated from dental school. We both did residencies, but we really didn't have like true business training and running a dental practice, opening a dental practice, buying a dental practice, running a dental practice. Let's face it, it's a small business. And I got to tell you, Rich, I had no business plan, no budget, no nothing. I mean, I was kind of like flying by the seat of my pants and hoping for the best. And I want to reiterate, you and I both did really well in our practice. It's not like we had failing practices and we kick ourselves now, we want to go back. We had good practices, but if only we would have followed some different principles, a little bit better principles, that I think they would have, I don't know, they might have doubled or tripled. I'm not really sure. But, you know, like, so I didn't have like a budget. I didn't really, if I had profit and loss statements, I didn't look at them. I didn't plan. I didn't have like true goals. I wasn't really running my dental practice like a business. And I think even in spite of that, I did okay. But oh my God, if I would have just known some simple business principles.
What's an example of running a practice like a business that you didn't do? Can you think of one?
Okay, so sure. I wasn't, we were seeing patients, we're collecting money, but I really wasn't clear on if somebody came up to me and said, hey, so what is your average monthly collections? I'm not even so sure I would have known that number. I didn't know my numbers really well. And let's face it, any business owner, any successful business owner should know their numbers cold. So I didn't know my numbers. I didn't have like true goals. We were, let's say bills came in and we were ordering supplies and maybe there was a decision to make, to buy another piece of equipment. Let's say some slick salesperson comes in and says, oh, if you buy this, you're going to do really well.
But they always do that.
They always do that. But without really paying attention to like a true budget or what would be the exact return on investment, they always make it sound like it's going to be great. But without really studying the true return on investment, you just got to get caught up in the moment. And say, oh, yeah, I'll get that. Even if it means taking a loan out. I mean, that's another thing. Taking loans out for equipment. That's not necessary. It could work. It may not work. But there was no real studying the numbers and really trying to figure it out. It was, again, flying by the seat of my pants. Oh, this looks good. I'll do that. And it just, you know something? It barely worked for me, luckily. But if I would have known better, the practice would have been so much better just going by some of these principles.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I look back on something that happened in my practice pretty early on. And I think if I had done this or even thought to do it, it would have made a huge difference. As you said, the practice was great. It grew nicely. It was very successful. But I bought a practice. It was a failing bankrupt practice. It was in a suburb of Baltimore, but kind of a small town. It was almost like an enclave. Like, you know, people didn't cross this town borders. Nobody would go into Baltimore City or Annapolis to go to their dentist. This little town was in between the two, and they would always stick within the town. So there were two dentists in the town. There was me. And there was a dentist about two blocks away. We were both in small shopping centers. Both horrible practices before I came into town. So I bought this failing bankrupt practice, started to build it up. A short time after that, the practice a couple blocks from me went up for sale. And I just toyed a little bit with the idea of purchasing it. And I figured, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to get involved in that. Things, you know, I don't really... My practice isn't growing enough yet that I can afford it. Or for whatever reason, I talked myself out of purchasing it. So these two kind of idiot brothers came into town. Not us. We're the other idiot brothers.
You scared me for a second. We just came into town.
Two dentists also that were brothers, like us. And they bought this practice. They really didn't know what the heck they were doing. But they were 10 times better than the person they bought the practice from. And sure enough, in a small amount of time, they built up a really nice practice there. We became friendly and we weren't competitive. We helped one another. We took call for one another. That was all good. But I often reflect back on what would have happened if I would have bought that practice. I would have had like a monopoly. I would have transferred all the patients to me, would have taken all the equipment. If somebody wanted to become a dentist in that space, it would have been a lot more difficult, probably would have taken years. So for at least a period of time, for a few years there, I would have been the only game in town, probably would have established an unbelievably quickly growing practice. But I didn't have the guts or maybe the confidence to buy that practice. So I just want to say to our listeners, look out for practices near you that are for sale, even if it's an old, decrepit dentist retiring and they just have a list of patients and the equipment's worthless. Do it, because if you don't do it, somebody else will. And it's the easiest, fastest way to get more patients in and get practice growth. So I think that was a big mistake. Again, the practice was successful. It probably would have been twice as successful had I done that.
It's funny. I'm not so sure you ever told me that story, but I'm curious. Do you kick yourself over that?
I mean,
do you
kick myself about
anything.
You don't
beat yourself up over it?
No, never. I don't look back. But
right.
But you know, it was a simple step I could have taken early on in my practice that would have paid great rewards. Let's put it that way.
So, do you think you would have like actually borrowed money? It would have been so important. You think you would have borrowed money for it?
Well, I don't know that I could have, and that might have been one of the reasons I didn't look into it very much. You know, I had a practice loan. Dad co-signed on it. I didn't have much, but...
Good old dad.
Right.
I can't remember if he co-signed mine, or I don't even know if I had a loan. I don't know. I can't remember.
But I don't know. I didn't even look into it enough to have made that determination.
Right.
I think that there's probably a way to do it should you want to do it. You know, my practice was already a couple years old. We had some success. I had the cash flow to support the note, I would imagine. So things were different than when I first bought the practice. So yeah,
true.
Maybe I would have qualified. I don't know. And again, I don't kick myself about it, but I think it's something that other people can learn from when an opportunity like that comes up. Really take it seriously. Look into it.
I still kick myself over a bunch of things in the early days of my practice. It's been decades, but I think back, if only I would have done, but here's another. So here, I didn't have like a true marketing plan. Like back in the day, and you might have been the same. I don't know. We used to have those mastermind sessions almost every evening, but my marketing consisted of everything and anything. So in other words, of course, I had a sign in front of the practice, but like typically I remember back in those days, like these reps would come in and they try to sell you like, okay, like I did the Yellow Page rep came in. I said, okay, yeah, I need to be in the Yellow Pages. So it wasn't a loan, but it was an agreement, like an annual contract and it was not cheap. So then the next day somebody else shows up and they're selling like Valpak coupons, mailings and things like that. And I said, well, I better do that or the competition's going to eat me alive. So I signed up for that. And, you know, and everything I did, there was no real plan. I just figured, okay, I'm just going to throw a whole bunch of things against the wall and see which one of these things works. And marketing is not necessarily inexpensive. A lot of this like Yellow Page ads, but yeah, I think I had like a half page or a full page ad. That's very, very, very expensive. Did I figure out what the ROI was on that? I don't think I even knew how to do that. But,
And back then they had, you know, the big Yellow Pages, the local Yellow Pages.
That's another thing.
The community newspaper. This was a different era.
I'm glad you brought all those up.
And a lot of times somebody repped all of them and they gave you like this whole big package deal and you get in everything. And it was crazy.
Well, I remember now that you said that, because I kind of forgot about that. Of course, there was the regular Yellow Pages. But then, every community had at least one of those, but probably two or three. Yeah. And so my thought process, I better be in this too. I better do this or the competition's going to
get placemats on the diner. I mean, there are so many things.
Before you know it, you're spending a fortune on marketing. And then are you tracking your marketing really accurately? Of course not. So again, I had no real plan. And even once I did all of the marketing, no real way to like seriously and accurately track it. And I wish I could just go back and plan better.
You know, it was tough to track in those days. Again, we're talking many years ago. The only way we could really track was to have somebody at the front desk with a little tally sheet. These days, with tracking numbers and you know, landing pages, it's much more sophisticated. And again, tip to our listeners, you need to really track everything accurately if you're doing any kind of marketing. And these days, you can do it. There's no guesswork. There's no magic at the front desk with a little tally sheet. So if you're doing different ways of marketing, you better make sure that all of them are extremely accurately tracked in the electronic way, in the way it's done these days. And it's amazing how many practices we talk to that aren't doing this, and they could do it. And a lot of times it doesn't even cost anything extra. So make sure you're using, you know, tracking numbers, landing page tracking, all those things.
And even past the tracking numbers, landing pages, all the clicks and you figure it out. But even I would recommend somebody calls your office, even if they ask a question, even if they don't set up an actual appointment, have your front desk team just engage them in a conversation. Hey, so tell me how you found out about it. So a simple question. How did you find out about our office?
I saw the sign.
Okay, click. Here we go. We mark it down on that manual spreadsheet.
Not that sign. Yeah, good one. A lot of lack of planning. I'll tell you something that I really should have done. It was a problem in my practice. We had a fantastic team. Some of them I kind of inherited from the doc I bought the practice from. Then as we grew, I hired more people. And we had one team member that needed to be fired. Everybody knew she needed to be fired. She was just negative. She brought everyone down. She gossiped. She backstabbed. She did all those things. She was great at her job clinically. Really, really fantastic. And because of that, and maybe because I was just a wussy, I was afraid to fire her. And I let it go on for a number of years until finally she did something so bad, so horrendous in front of the team, in front of the patients. I just said, just get out of here right now. Just leave. But until then, I kept this person, and it was my fault, 100% my fault. As soon as this person was out of the practice, everything was better. Everything was calmer. Everyone did their job better. We hired somebody new, and I got to say, who was not as clinically talented as this person who left, but everything was just better. And I think it's something that, you know, they say hire slowly, fire quickly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not sure I agree with that 100%. I mean, you don't want to just fire somebody if they do one thing wrong. I think team members need the freedom to make mistakes and to grow and to know that if they try something and it doesn't work, it won't be held against them. But when somebody is just, you know, a devil in the practice, when somebody just likes to play one person against another, or just, you know, that kind of person, nah, they need to go. And I made a big mistake in not doing it soon enough.
That was one of my mistakes. Let me ask you a question. Have you in your whole career, dental and even after that, business, have you ever fired somebody and you look back and said, well, I shouldn't have fired them. I really want them back.
Well, the main thing that I've said in my career, and I haven't fired that many people, I got to say, I always let you do it.
Yeah, you make me do it. Right? Thanks a lot. No, yeah.
But I think generally the thing that you say after you fire someone is, I wish I would have done that a long time ago.
Sooner. Yep. Wish I would have done it sooner.
Team members, exactly. If you're listening, don't worry. Your jobs aren't on the line unless you're that one team member that needs to be fired. Because we love our team members and we like to encourage them and help them. And again, if they make mistakes, it's fine if it's in the name of growth. But the horrible attitudes, the backstabbers, nah, don't wait.
Get rid of them fast. Yep. I say fast. Yep. Get rid of them fast.
Take them right out in the parking lot and fire them. That's how we do it around here. We haven't really had to fire that many people.
I think we have like the best team ever right now. I mean, I love these
They're
people.
Fantastic.
It's a pleasure to come in and work with people that you love. Yep. It really is. It truly is.
Are you thinking of something else? I can't remember. I really don't think I made that many mistakes, but I think those two are two real big ones.
I got another one, and I'll run this by you because I'm not sure if you made the same mistake or not, Rich, but I think back in the day when I started my practice, I kind of thought that, well, I'm young, I finished dental school, I've been reading a lot, I know it all, and I don't need to like get advice from experts. But I'll tell you something, that was perhaps my biggest mistake, because some of the experts I should have surrounded myself with, I'll give you like a couple examples, maybe you even have more, Rich, but like a good financial planner. Like, I just, you know, I didn't really know. Okay, I was earning some money, but nobody really ever told me what to do with the money. So, you know, you put it in the checking account, you pay your bills at home, you buy some stuff. But nobody, like, ever said, hey, maybe you should take a percentage of this money and put it into, like, for example, a mutual fund or an IRA or something. Nobody really, I didn't have, like, a go-to person that said, hey, you should, here's what you need to do. And if you do this stuff that I'm going to teach you to do, by the time you're, whatever the age is, 50, 60, 123, you're going to be very, very wealthy. I didn't have that person. I think I wasted a lot of years just, again, flying by the seat of my pants and just doing kind of like what other people are kind of doing and getting into the doctor lifestyle. That's not a good thing, because you think you need to keep up with everybody else. That's not good. I don't think I had the right attorney or a good attorney, because when I started my practice, they're all kind of like legal things you need to do. And again, I don't even remember what I did, but I didn't have like a really great go-to attorney.
You just had that guy who lived on the corner?
Exactly. He was like a schlemiel. I don't know what he was with, a schlub or schlemiel. He was a nice guy, but I don't think he was like the guy.
He might have been a schlemazel, actually.
And you know, there's a funny story about this, and you probably know exactly what I'm talking about. That guy that used to hang around the dental school. His name was Aaron Granley. He was an insurance guy, but he would like hang around the dental school and hang out with dental students and say, you need insurance. And you know something? Never took the guy seriously. I thought he was just there to sell me a bill of goods. And maybe he was, but again, like never had like a good insurance person. And the one thing I never really had was a good kind of coach or consultant, somebody that can look at the practice from another way and say, hey, if you just did things this way, maybe it would be a lot better. Later on, I hired this kind of quote unquote consultant, this group, and they weren't even dentists. And they would send like this burnt out hygienist in, and her best advice was just do a crown on every single patient that has an amalgam.
In other words, let's commit malpractice in order to make a little more money.
I'll tell you, the scariest thing is I bought into it for like a short amount of time until I couldn't.
That explains my four crowns that I don't need. Until
I couldn't put my head on my pillow at night saying, wait a minute, I'm crowning teeth. If this were a person in my own family, I'm not so sure I would be doing it. But I was doing it in the name of this consultant that said, I needed to surround myself with some more experts that could really help me.
Yeah, I think it's really true that, you know, the really, really good people might cost a little more money. But so often, you know, you need a lawyer. You just take your cousin's recommendation. You get a lawyer. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, they know how to do contracts. They know nothing about dentistry. Same with an accountant, a financial planner, an insurance person. They all should know dentistry. You know, there are, as a matter of fact, as you know, I just had lunch with a lawyer a couple weeks ago who's a contract attorney, and he does dental contracts. That's like a little subspecialty. Mm-hmm. Well, he's going to know if a practice, you know, an associate's coming in or practice is being bought or sold, exactly what needs to be done. And just a regular attorney just does a regular, like a template.
Template, cookie cutter template. Right.
Things are not one size fits all.
Right.
You know, we feel very strongly about our coaching that we're two dentists. We've seen it all. We've done it all. As we always say, we've given injections. We've been thrown up on. We've yelled at insurance companies. You know, we've done all this stuff personally. And there's just nothing like that kind of experience. So yeah, everybody you deal with should know what they're doing, even if it costs a little bit more. Even office design. You know, there are people that specialize in dental office design. Well, who's going to build you a better office, them or the interior designer down the street?
Right. At IKEA, you hire somebody from IKEA to come in.
Right, I mean, they have good Swedish meatballs.
Great plate. Right. You know, yeah, there's something else I was going to say about expert. Oh, yeah, so if there's, let's say, a friend of yours, if they have a toothache, they're not going to extract their own tooth. They're going to hire an expert, hopefully you, to do it because you were trained to do it properly. So why are we trying to do
You're
going to
charge
things?
More than the barber if the barber extracted the tooth.
Exactly. Right. So why are we trying to do things that we could hire like a true expert and get a better job and it comes out financially better in the end for sure.
It's so funny. I remember kind of an aside. When I first got, well, not when I first got married, but when my wife and I bought our first home that had an actual lawn that needed to be mowed. And I said, okay, I'm going to go to Heckinger. That was a local store here in the Maryland area.
I was just talking about Heckinger the other day to my son.
Kind of like the precursor to Home Depot.
Yeah, exactly.
They were big
exactly,
in Maryland.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go to Heckinger and buy a lawnmower. And she said, are you sure you want to do that? I said, well, yeah, of course. What else am I going to do? The lawn's not going to mow itself. She said, pay a little bit more, get someone to do it. First of all, they'll do a better job. You're not going to chop off your toe. And secondly, you know, you work your butt off, you make really good money. Do you want to spend every Sunday morning mowing the lawn? And I said, F no, I don't want to do that. So sure enough, we hired the guy to mow the lawn. Yes, he did a better job. Yes, he was not all that expensive. And I didn't have some lawnmower from Heckinger rotting in the shed. So you got to leave it to the experts.
It frees up
your time, too.
That's like
so valuable.
In the old neighborhood, you and I both hired that same expert to build our garage. Can you imagine if we tried to build a garage? No, let the experts do the stuff that you either don't want to do or can't do.
Yep,
that's exactly
absolutely right.
Hey,
I'm just thought of one more and I'm going to wrap it up. And I told you at the beginning, it's something that happened towards the end of my practice.
Yeah,
so
I want to hear this.
As all you listeners know, Dave and I no longer practice. We both sold our practices when we decided that the Matto Center was just growing full-time and, you know, had to make that decision. It was a great decision. But I had a really good practice. But I kind of saw this day coming. You sold your practice a little bit before I did. So I really saw the day coming for maybe close to a year. But I made the mistake of winding down. I started taking it easy. My mind wasn't necessarily on the practice. It was on this, you know, the Matto Center business known as Creative Management Resources in those days. And I started working a little bit less. Yeah, I had some associates, but I wasn't really on top of them. And the practice started just plateauing. And I should have had a plan. You were talking about planning before, a plan in that last year, I was going to build the practice up. I should have hired a coach who knew how to do it, had really great associates, and they're cracking it out. So then when the time came to show the practice, I could have said it's worth X when it was probably actually worth X divided by 2 by the time I sold it. Now, look, I'm not complaining. I got a nice check. I walked away. It was a great day. But looking back on it, the check probably should have been twice as much if I had a really great plan that last year and not let it dwindle. So dentists, you know, even from the day you open your practice, you're always thinking about the day you're going to sell. So have an exit plan, as they say, and don't make the exit plan be I'm going to dwindle down until I get a backache, then I'm going to sell at a fire sale price. Have it that you sell at the peak price when you're ready to say goodbye and not half of the peak price.
Great one.
We'll be glad to talk to you about it, too. It's really important stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
Yep.
Should we do our call of the day?
Let's do the call of the day. Never get sick of a call of
the day. These
are always
fun. Okay, let's find a good one.
Dental office, hold on a second, please. Thank you.
Okay. De-de-de-de-de-de-de. I love being on
hold. What are they doing?
I'm not sure exactly. helping another patient that deserves
dental
it.
Dental office, how may I help you?
Hi, quick question for you. I'm just getting dental insurance. It's through Prudential, and I want to use that, but I don't know a whole lot about it. So I'd like to learn how that works. And also, do you have Saturday hours for new patients?
Yes, we do. The only thing is that on Saturdays, we don't do checkups and cleanings. Checkup and cleaning has to be done Monday through Friday, but in the future, if you need any services, any other services, then checkup and cleaning, then we can do it on Saturday.
Well, how do I know if I need any services if I don't get a checkup?
Well, the first visit, we have to do checkup and a cleaning. So that one has to be scheduled during the week, but we have late hours.
Okay, but you're taking new patients, though.
We're taking new patients.
Right.
And about your insurance, the only insurances we accept, any insurance that's PPO plan. So make sure that you're getting PPO plan.
So you don't take regular insurance, just PPO plan?
Well, there is no such thing as a regular insurance. Each insurance has different plans. There is the HMO plans, there is DMO plans, there is PPO plans. So the only plans we accept here is a PPO plan.
I mean, my plan's just traditional dental insurance. I think they told me it's better than a PPO. You don't take that?
Okay, so probably we do take it.
Okay.
As long as it's not HMO or DMO.
Got you. But I can't come in as a new patient on a Saturday.
Well, you can come in as a new patient on a Saturday only if you come with a certain tooth. If you want to do complete checkup in a clinic, which is always recommended to start with, then it has to be Monday through Friday. But we have late hours. We can schedule as late as 6 o'clock.
Got you. Okay, well, thank you so much for the information.
No problem.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye now.
Holy moly, that was just unbelievable.
do we need to comment on that? I don't even know.
Maybe no comment. Well, first of all, well, there were so many crazy things. I love how she said, we only take your insurance if it's a PPO. It's like... My insurance is better than a PPO. Well, you know, I'm not sure about that.
And do most, like, prospective patients even, do they even know exactly what PPO is? I guess these days a lot of people do, but some don't.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, she could have said, we'll take your insurance unless it's an HMO or a,
right.
A GMO, genetically modified organism.
No GMOs.
Right. I also like how you can only get an examination during the week. So if you want to become a new patient, you just have to come in with a toothache. That's the only way you can be a new patient, if you come in with a tooth, as she said. Wow.
I'll tell you, these calls are just a dime a dozen.
As we say around here, they write themselves.
They write themselves. We couldn't have even written that. Yeah.
Well, hey, everybody, thanks so much for being with us for episode 3 of The Dental Practice Fixers. I'm your co-host, Dr. Richard Maddow.
I'm Dr. David Maddow.
We'll see you next time. Thanks for being with us. It's a mistake. It's a mistake.